So we start today worlds were there of a childlike mirth and joy, a carefree youthfulness of mind and heart found in the body of a heavenly instrument. It lit an aureate halo round the desire and freed the deified animal in the limbs to divine gambols of love and beauty and bliss. On a radiant soil that gazed at heaven's smile, a swift life impulse stinted not nor stopped. It knew not how to tire. Happy were its tears. Their work was play, and play the only work, the tasks of heaven, a game of godlike might. A celestial bacchanal, forever pure, unstayed by faintness as in mortal frames, life was an eternity of rapture's moods. Age never came, care never lined the face. This is the world of the vital heaven, the sense of perfection in the vital plane. It is not the highest world, but every world has its perfection. In the world of life, the vital, there is also a manifestation of the universal spirit, the cosmic force, the force of the delight of existence, of manifestation, of everything that works towards simply the joy of being. Just to be, not necessarily to struggle. Even struggle also has its joy. So there was nothing that is contrary to joy in the world of this vital heaven. So he says, worlds were there of a childlike mirth and joy. That is why he uses the word childlike. This world, it is a world of childlike joy. That kind of joy which does not have to struggle to be happy. Whatever is a joy. It's a world of simplicity, of naturalness. This is the original delight of existence. Existence, manifestation of an energy that does not have to be constantly questioned. When the mind comes in our life, when we become, you might say, mental beings as well, each time there is a joy or a desire, there is a kind of assessment. Is this good? Is this right? Should I do this? Did I do it right? Was it not all wrong? These things spoil the simplicity of naturalness. This is the ananda of the vital plane that does not question, that does not doubt. It is the pure vital plane. So the mental doubts, questions, hesitations are not here. It's not a world of mind. It's a world of life. Life is the energy of manifestation, of play of all kinds of, even desire. Desire has its own joy of being. The moment desire is sad, sometimes questioned by the mind, is it right to want this? If I don't get it, will I be unhappy? Then it is not that joy. It is not this world. This is simply the glory of life. The life force without which there can be no existence. This is the principle of universal force, which is not an intellectual thing. The moment the intellect comes, the naturalness is gone. A kind of questioning, a hesitation, the simplicity is lost. That is why he calls it childlike. Simple, innocent, mirth and joy. A carefree youthfulness. Care in the sense worry. Worry brings hesitation, doubt, fear sometimes. Supposing I don't get what I want, should I? Can I be happy? All these things. Actually, that is where the child is luckier. As a little child, a small little one, does not doubt, does not question. He simply is. This is youthfulness. The moment you start becoming mentally mature, that simplicity is gone. Of mind and heart, found in the body a heavenly instrument. These desires, these joy have to be expressed. So you run, you play, you eat, you sleep, without any kind of thinking that I am doing, like a little puppy or a little kitten. They just are. They're playing with anything. They don't question, is it right to chase this mouse? Is it right? They don't question. The moment you just start questioning, your simplicity is gone. That is one of the problems. It is a problem, but it is also part of our progress. You enter into a different level of consciousness. There you think. That thought makes you lose that naturalness, but makes you aware of many other things at the same time. It lit an aureate halo around desire. That is the whole thing. Otherwise, most of us, when you use the word desire, it is associated with personal satisfaction. I want. So the individual, the ego, is the center of desire. It is not what the divine wants. It is not what everybody wants. It is what I like. I want. This is the whole problem of desire. And if I don't get what I want, I will not be happy. That is the explanation Buddha gives. Cut off connection with desire, you cut off connection with pain, with sorrow. Because we are attached to, we are tied to desire. So this is, at this stage, the sense of ego is not yet formed. Ego also is a formation that grows gradually. Therefore, the deified animal, he uses the image of an animal that exists in a body which has a life force which has not yet got the sense of division. And you say, in the world of the human mind, there is a division of right and wrong. Is it right to have this or is it wrong? If I do this, shall I be happy? Shall I be happy when somebody else becomes unhappy? I get what I want, so somebody else is not getting what I want. He may also want the same thing. So we enter into a world of all kinds of questionings, doubts, hesitations, incertitudes. But when you don't think like that, you have not yet developed your mind enough. You just are. That is the whole state of simple, innocent existence of very small children. They just are. They live according to their nature. Each being has its own nature, has its own law, and it does not doubt. As mind comes in, many other things come into play as you grow into a mental being. That simplicity is gone. You acquire a wealth of information, a wealth of experience. All kinds of things open up before you with all their different complexities, all their different complications also come. Become aware of the possibilities of error, of pain, of wrong. Is it wrong to want this? And the natural joy of life is gone.
That means all dualities come up only after the mind comes.
Yes. Mind is the nature of duality. That is why one of the names you use is Dvandva. Dvandva is two-ness. Two-ness means opposition. Right versus wrong. When you are not, the question of just being, there is no duality. There is no sense of wrong. In the world of the vital also, there are things that from our point of view is not right. You have, for instance, just now, you have these cuckoo birds. They start singing, you call it singing or calling to each other at 2:30 in the morning. So you say, this fellow calling his friend from one tree to another at 2:30 in the morning, I have a right to sleep. He doesn't question. He feels like calling, he calls. That's all. It's very simple. Like a little baby. When he wants something, he wants it. He doesn't say, should I ask for this? Will I be scolded if I ask for this? The moment that starts, you're no longer just a simple child. It comes with maturity. So maturity has its gains, it has also its beginning of self. I will be hurt, I will be disturbed, I will be scolded. That is not there. That is why to divine gambols. Gambols are play of small animals. They jump around, they're simple, innocent, of love and beauty and bliss. On a radiant soil that gazed at heaven's smile, as if from below life goes on in all its beauty and joy and happiness, and the sky above, because every world has its own sky. It has its, the sky is its, you might say, limit, its ceiling. And then you could rise to that level, there is another world. That has its own ceiling also, has its own maximum. You rise to another world still higher, which has its own maximum. And thus you can go on and on and on. As you grow, standards change. But at any given moment, where you are, you have a maximum. Maximum of that world. When you have arrived at that, your being has evolved, has developed its faculties, then you start doubting, questioning, analyzing, trying to justify if it is not right, all the other activities that take away the simple joy of life. On a radiant soil that gazed at heaven's smile, a swift life impulse stinted not, nor stopped. Stint, you know, when you try to hold back something. So don't ask for so much. You ask a little when you in the world of life. You ask for some happiness, some joy. Don't ask for everything. No, this is a simple life. It did not stop. The delight of the flowers blooming, the fish swimming in the water, they don't question. It is the simplest state of the vital energy. It knew not how to tire. Happy were its tears. The tears were not necessarily the tears of pain. It could be simply the excess of experience. When you have an extreme excess of love, of joy, there is no expression other than tears. There are no words. When you are very, very happy, you have nothing to say. Tears come to your eyes. So this sense of arriving at a fullness of one's own experience. There, work was play, and play the only work. And this is a solution for us. When we enjoy what we do, it is no longer a task. When I don't enjoy what I do, it becomes a burden. I'm obliged to do this work. But when I do, even as a child, he has to do his work. He has to, at school, he has to do his work, or wherever else he has to do, whatever task he's been given, he has to do. He does it because he is compelled to do it. It becomes a pressure. It is no longer a joy. But when, even at our stage, we take up work, and as you find that in every work there is the element of the possibility of happiness. You put all your heart in the work without any question. You do it as an offering. You do it with love. Any work done with love is joy. It doesn't matter how much strain you have, how tired your body may be. It gives you joy. When you work for someone you love, it is not a pain. Though your body may suffer, it doesn't matter. So it is the only sense of inner delight of existence. And where there is delight, there is love. It's always the two. They go together. Their work was joy, and play the only work. The tasks of heaven, a game of godlike might. The tasks of heaven, when man is sometimes expected, actually that is how we grow. We are expected to do things beyond our reach. At every stage, you have to attempt that which is beyond your reach. Then you have the sense of achievement. If you do things that are within your reach, that are simple, that are natural, there is not that sense of manifesting perfection. But you go beyond your limits. You do more than you can, and you do it happily. And there's a sense of having broken out of your littleness. You've done something more than you can, and that is the delight of experience. That too. So that is, the vital world is not just joy, it is also force. It is also power. The tasks of heaven, a game of godlike might, a celestial bacchanal, forever pure. The two words usually don't go together. Bacchanal is associated with, you know, the god Bacchus, the god of wine. So intoxication, you get swept away. But men often do activities that make them forget their humanness. You get caught up in all kinds of activities which, as a human being, you say, I should not do these things. But when there is a pleasure, and that pleasure is very, very powerful in its attraction, I forget that I should not do it. I do it because I am swept away by that desire. But at this stage, this is a celestial bacchanal, because the mind has not yet learned to complain. I allow myself to be carried away by a play of forces, and I go beyond my physical possibilities. My physical possibilities has a limited amount of energy, a limited amount of life force. One of the great joys of existence is to do more than you can, to be able to do the maximum of yourself, to be at the maximum of yourself. In fact, that is Mother's sentence that she taught to the students. This is not exactly the vital, this is much more, but she says, this is the lesson of life. To be at each moment the maximum of what you can be. Our maximum is quite a lot. To arrive at our own maximum is quite high. We arrive, those maximum moments are few and far between. See, now and then I've done something extremely extraordinary. We call it extraordinary because to be ordinary is to be something mediocre. Can we always be extraordinary? So that we don't look upon it as something exceptional. That is really one of the goals of a developed civilized being. A civilized being, a gentleman, according to a writer, I think it is Cardinal Newman of the 19th century. What is a gentleman? A person who never had to say, I'm sorry. Never had to say, I'm sorry. He never went against what he knew was not the right thing to do. This is not often done. This is the exception, this is not the rule. Most of us go through things we know they should not be done, they are done, we do them. We allow ourselves to sink. We allow ourselves to really grovel in the dirt. But if at the same time we allow ourselves to rise, to dream, to attempt, to go beyond our limits, once in a while we try. Why not all the time? These are the heroes. This is not the greater, lesser humanity, this is the greater humanity in the world of life. Other people will say this is not common sense. One of the things that throws cold water on your greatness is common sense. It is not logical to attempt to be always right, beautiful, correct. Correct in the sense to avoid whatever is dirty, whatever is dark, to live with the world of harmony and love and joy and beauty. All this we can't do. We have a lowest common denominator. Our lowest common denominator is low. We live in the body. It has its tiredness, it has its refusals, it has its resistances. You say, I can't do these things. We can. If we decide we don't have to be the slave of the lower nature. This vital heaven is not the lower nature. It is pure nature, the life force. It is not the material body. The material body, its law is inertia. Matter's law is inertia. You have to break out of the law of inertia. You have to make an effort. In the world of life, it's simply an outburst of delight. It's all existence comes with delight. That is the beginning of, in the poem Love and Death, Sri Aurobindo, in the first line, when earth was built. That's how the poem starts. It's a projection of the divine plan, the universe. All the elements came, earth and air and fire and water and ether, all the five elements came into play. They are just there, but how can they be blended? How can they be made use of? That next line is, and delight desired the world. This world becomes the field of delight. Then, that is why we love life. Without understanding, we love life. We don't love leaving the world. We love to be in the world. Unknowingly, unconsciously, life holds us. Death repels us. We don't like death. We have always died. It is not normal. We still feel death is not right. But it is not normal. It is a rejection of the play of the life force. Because we are like small containers, like a pot or a container that can hold only that much, water. The rest will spill out. Our being can hold only a certain amount of joy. The rest stops being joy. After a while, that same joy is no longer happening. You feel the same experience of delight every day. After a while, it becomes commonplace. It's not joy. We are given a beautiful world. We are given air to breathe. We take it for granted. We don't realize what a grace it is. We don't take joy in breathing. We don't even know how to do it well. If we did, we wouldn't ask for anything more than that. Sometimes when a person is drowning in the at the end, bottom of a pool, all he wants to do is to breathe. He comes out of the water and he fills his lungs with breath. And he says, that is the supreme benediction. This is one of the lines that I think it was a mystic poet, Traherne, of the 18th century English mystic poet, who said, to breathe is a beatitude. There is no greater joy than breathing. Just to know how to breathe. To fill your life with your lungs, with the whole world. The universal energy is filling us. What a gift we are getting. And we participate in this play of the delight of existence. That is the third term of manifestation. Sat, Chit, Shakti, Ananda. Ananda on different levels. In the level of life. It is pure. But it is not the highest form of ananda because it still is not aware of itself. This is simply the intermediary world. It's all right? So a celestial bacchanal, forever pure. The two words are actually mutually contrary. Bacchanals are not pure. Normally, we allow ourselves the lower instincts to rule us. You start drinking, you're happy once. Then you're twice, and the third time, you don't drink anymore by choice. It becomes a compulsion. It controls you, you don't control it. Life controls you, you don't control it. It takes over. Unstayed by happiness, by faintness, as in mortal frames, unstayed. To stay is to check. One of the early meanings of to stay is to check. So it is unstayed by weakness, faintness, because we have a certain limited amount of energy, which after a while gets exhausted. So at the end of the day, you feel tired. My quota of energy has been spent. Now I can't carry on anymore. Can I draw from the endless source of energy? Then I know how to live eternally. That is why Hanuman never died. because he is the child of energy. It's the play of the universal force. There is no exhaustion. We are small. We have this limited quota given to us. After that you say, I can't carry on anymore, I have to go to sleep. This is the smallness of our being. If I can identify myself with the universal play, I am the universe. No sense of weakness, no sense of tiredness, no sense of fear. All these things come. This is not there if you say, take the example of Hanuman, for instance. Life was an eternity of rapturous boons, all the delights of existence, the joy in every mode of behavior, joy in falling, joy in rising, joy in playing, joy in whatever we are, whatever we do. It's not that you have to do anything special. What we are doing now, to take joy in it, automatically the thing becomes special. If I can take joy in the things that I'm eating, whatever the food is, it becomes wonderful. If I take joy in simply looking at a tree, it becomes a delight of experience. I don't have to go to the ends of the earth to look at the, you might say, the midnight sun, all the way to Finland or Iceland or wherever. I can see the sun all the time. It's so marvelous. You see, it is just a state of being inside. We have a continuous need for change. I want this, I have not seen, I want to see this. I have not been there, I want to do that. If I can do the same thing every day as if it is for the first time, then that is the delight of existence. You have never seen a flower before. Every day you see the flower, it's for the first time. That's why nature puts all her colors, all her beauty in one flower, one day. The next day the same flower has the same color, the same play of beauty, the same play of all its possibilities. Because she doesn't think. We think. You say, no, this I've got used to, I've seen this flower before. It's not special anymore. We are so weak, the same joy doesn't remain joy for too long. It has to be replaced by something new. That is the problems. Especially in the modern world. And life was an eternity of rapturous moods. Age never came. Age is when the delight is beginning to get exhausted. That we can't hold on. It is not the number of years. It's a state of consciousness. As Mother says, you can be young at the age of 100. For you it is in your heart, in your mind. You see things with a sense of discovery. Life is a marvelous journey of the spirit, and it is nothing to do with how many years you have spent on the planet. Age never came. Care never lined the face. Care is worry. Care is a burden. Care comes from thought. So all these worries make us forget how to be simple. Tomorrow life may be difficult. So it will be difficult. I have to learn to experience my nature through difficulty. Why do I worry from today about what tomorrow will be like? But this is man. Imposing on the safety of the stars, a race and laughter of immortal strengths, the nude godchildren in their play fields ran. But this sense of absence of worrying. He calls it the safety of the stars. The stars they are not planets. They are suns. They are permanently there. I turn my back to the sun, therefore I am in the night. I turn back to the sun in the morning, and I see it shining. The sun, the stars are always there. They shine in the dark. The presence of light is always there. I have turned away from it. That's why I don't see. Man sees the stars only at night. Have they gone away during the daytime? They are always there. We fail to see things for what they are. We see things partially, a little at a time. But the guidance of light is forever there. It is not there. Therefore, the safety of the stars, the guidance in the darkness, in our ignorance, in our darkness, in our unconsciousness, there is a light. There is a guidance. If I know that whatever I am, I may be ignorant, I may be small, I have not yet evolved myself fully, it is a race and laughter of immortals, strengths. Strength is energy. This is a vital world of energy. This energy is endless. Energy is without any beginning, without any end. Where does eternity start? Where does the life force start? It is always there. I draw as much as I can hold. My being is a vessel. This is the original word of the being, Aadhar. Aadhar is really a pot, a vessel. I can hold as much as my pot is capable of holding. But the universal air or water, the elements of existence, they are not limited to my vessel. If when I become vaster, I can experience more. I can become even vaster, and that is the change that comes with the growth of consciousness. I can experience the whole totality of the universe. Otherwise, I'm a small fragment of a little being. That amount of joy that this little being can contain is in proportion to my littleness. So that much only I can feel because I am small. Small inside, small in my being, small in my capacity to experience, not small in age. Small in age is fine. The child can really be a channel for infinite or indefinite joy. He doesn't question. The problem with man comes when he starts saying, I can't do this. You're asking me to do something that is not possible. Like you showed me the picture. You see, she has a little granddaughter, Divya, who is not even 1 year old.
One and a half.
One and a half, all right. And you see the picture that she showed us. That little girl is carrying 2 dumbbells of 2 kilos each and walking around and happily moving around. You say, you see this, show it. It's something quite exceptional. She doesn't, as an elder person, you say, how can she do this? These are 2 kilos each and this little thing is not even 1 foot high. But she's doing it. And because she's doing it, her mind doesn't doubt. Her mind doesn't say it can't be done. Our minds would say, I can't do it. I can't lift this mountain. So I can't lift the mountain. But if I don't doubt, there are beings who lift mountains. That is the task given to the Titan forces, the universal vital forces. They were known as the Titans. They're not necessarily Asuras. They're cut off from the spiritual delight, the divine but they are simply channels of endless energy. When the God of mind came to control the earth, and that is Zeus, he punished these titans. He gave them tasks of such enormous difficulty as if to punish them. So, like one of them was called Atlas. He had to hold up the sky. The sky is very big. He has to stand and hold the sky, otherwise it will fall on your head. This is there in Asterix, no?
Yes.
That it falls on my head, I have to hold up the sky. But it doesn't fall on us. Somebody is holding it up. Atlas is holding it up. When Hercules, the son of God, came, saw, he changed Atlas into a mountain. So you have the Atlas Mountains in the north of Africa. They're holding up the sky. This is actually symbolic. All these stories are very, very symbolic. To do things of such enormous difficulty as if they are not difficult. The mental world comes and they bring in all kinds of complications. So, the nude God children, nude of doubt, nude of defeat, nude of all these other coverings that layer our nature, they are simply natural, spontaneous. In their play fields ran, smiting the winds with splendor and with speed. Of storm and sun they made companions. All the natural energies, they are their friends. You need power, you need difficulties to realize how strong you are, to overcome your weakness. Slew distance. Okay, I can't see anymore. Of storm and sun they made companions, slew distance, trampled to death under their wheels, and wrestled in the arenas of their force. This is what these simple beings, God children, if you realize you are actually projections, expressions of the divine force. You don't even know, you don't think. You are not doing anything. The force is doing it through you. So there is no sense of, I can't do this, this is not possible for me. I am not the author of my action. There's another force that is working through me. This is the heaven of the vital world. Oh, these are certain gods at this vital level. This is what you call the gods. Okay, we stop here.